Today's program is proudly brought to you by Culture City, a for-purpose organization that provides a place of acceptance and support for all autism families. For more information, visit culturecity.org.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. We have a very, very special show for you today, and I am excited about it. But before we get started, I wanted to remind you that if you like this episode of In the Drink, you can always listen to previous episodes on heritageradionetwork.org/in the drink or on iTunes. Even better, if you subscribe, then you'll get them all uploaded automatically, which would be great. I also wanted to let you know that if you want more of me, you can always come visit me at our restaurants, Del Anima, Lartuzzi, La Picho, and our wine bar, Anfora. Unfortunately, Alta Linea is now closed for the season as of this past weekend. It was a great run, and thank you all to those of you who have come and sipped a frozen Negroni or some delicious wine with us. One of those wines that we had there that I was very excited about was the wine called Prologo from one of my favorite producers in Italy. The producer's name is De Fermo, and in studio with us today we have Stefano Papetti Cerroni.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome to In the Drink.
Oh, thank you.
It's so exciting to have you here. I'm very, very happy for you to be in the studio. Other than making the De Fermo wines, Stefano and I also work on a project together called Annona, which is also just released a couple of weeks ago here in New York. And so last time I saw you, we were driving around the hills of Loreto Arpentino in Abruzzo, yeah. And now we're in Bushwick.
Yeah, it's fantastic, Joe. It's like a dream for me to be here because, you know, we started so a few years ago. So to be here with you, with Grand Crew Group, it's a very big thing for me and for the family, actually.
And and you have one of our best partners when it comes to wine distributor Grand Cru. We absolutely love working with them. So many exciting things. They had many classic, extraordinary quality wines, great wines from Champagne and Burgundy, and now really expanding into Italy and getting really cool producers who are making more natural wines as well, like you guys.
I'm so proud to be part of the group of Grand Cru, actually. Great quality wines. Yesterday we had the portfolio tasting, so I tasted all the colleagues' wine. Great things, actually. It was fantastic.
And so this is your first trip to New York as a visiting producer, doing portfolio tasting, and tonight we're going to have a dinner at La Picho. And I should say, if you'd like to meet Stefano in person, between 5 and 8, we will be at Anfora, and we'll do a very casual producer night, so we're going to have all of his wines by the glass, including some of the Annona wine that he made by the glass, and you can just have the glass of wine and hang out. How is that experience for you, representing the winery, being here in New York first time?
It's quite a weird thing, actually, because I came in New York a few times visiting with my family, with my wife, and be here talking about the wine. For me, it was a dream, actually, until a few years ago, because we started in 2010 producing a little quantity of wine. So being here in after 5 years, actually, is a very big thing, actually. So it was a dream where I was a child. You know that I started to open bottle at 12, actually, not to drink, but to smell it, because it was a passion, considering that my family is not a farmer family, and they live in a town, they live in Bologna, that is my born town. And so... Actually, I started to follow wine thing on the new magazine, on cooking magazine of my mom, and then opening bottles so young, and at 18, all my pocket money went to buying bottle and visiting, actually.
Were there cooking magazines in Italy back? Yeah, your mom had Italian cooking. That just blows my mind that would even exist. Here we don't have too many great traditions of cooking. I think that people are self-conscious.
Yeah.
And so they look to magazines so much. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, even back then, 20, 30 years ago, there were Italian cooking magazines.
Yeah, but still now in Italy, there are 3 or 4 weekly magazines. Mm-hmm. Very important for our tradition. So you know the long tradition of cooking in Italy. So
especially in Bologna, very
Bologna is a special place for pastas, you know, the tortellini and stuff like that. Actually, but you know that I went in Abruzzo for love of my wife, and then I found a very different cooking tradition. But it's great, you know. In Italy, 22 regions have 22 different tradition in every region you go. You can find incredible cooking, incredible from vegetables to everything. Actually, Abruzzo has a very long tradition of lamb and fresh stuff. So it was a very great surprise to me. I went in Abruzzo for the first time at 24. Actually, before I traveled the world a few times with my family. That is my father is a traveler, so I went everywhere in the world, and I'd never been in Abruzzo until 24, 25 years old. Then my wife took me for the first time in her native place, and it was my second coup de foudre. It was my second great love, actually. I found a place, it's an incredible place. You, Joe, you came to Loretta Prutino, that you know that is my the true and first LA in the world, actually.
It's true, it existed before LA in California.
Absolutely. And it's a fantastic place, actually. It's out of the touristic roadmap in Italy. But this is a chance for me today to invite all the people to come in Abruzzo. They will find the glacier and the sea in very close one each other. Mm-hmm. It seems to be New Zealand, told me an Australian friend. I said, no, in New Zealand, they seems to be in Abruzzo, actually. And you can find incredible places, actually.
Yeah, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but a half hour or 45 minutes to the Adriatic Sea.
Exactly.
And just beautiful fish that we've enjoyed together many times. And then maybe half hour, 45 minutes to the mountains.
To the mountain and skiing.
And then in between that, you have extraordinary vineyards and olives and some plains where there are some really great grains that make extraordinary pasta as well.
Yeah. And Loretta Prutino especially is a very famous in Italy, but I think all over the world for the wine passionate, because you know there's one of the best wine producers in the world, that is Valentini's family, very famous for their Trebbiano, Cerasuolo, and Montepulciano. So there's a tradition of producing wine, a very long tradition. I mean, olives more than olive oil more than wine, but you know, olive oil market is so difficult, and so wine is easier, and the terroir of Loretta Prutino is great. Consider that even if I don't put so much importance on the guides regarding wine, but if you do an exception for the area of Barolo, of Lange, and also for the Brunello, for Montalcino area, the area of Brunello, there are three, four little towns in Italy that have a lot of high quality producer considered by the guides, and Loretta Prutino is one of that. Like in Friuli, there's Cormons, that's the area of Cormons, or in Alto Adige, so in the very north part of Italy, so few little towns that have so much producer. Loretta Prutino is a special place, and I think...
But who are the other quality? I mean, I think Valentini makes such extraordinary and expressive wines that probably he pulls a lot of weight, you know, and, yeah. and you know, there could be 10 good producers, but one Valentini is really special. And then we love the wines of Torre de Beati, who's also in your Loretto. Area. In Loretto, but and are there other producers as well?
Yeah, outside of Loretto, actually, Loretto, the part Valentino and Torre de Beati, they are great people, great wine, organic, and all in Abruzzo is growing a little group of young producer. I mean, under 40s, like me. so there's a growing group.
In 5 years, Young will be under 45.
So there are a few little farm that produces more or less 10,000-15,000 bottle. They are doing great wine, actually. And if you come to Abruzzo, you have to visit them because they are producing very artisan wine. Mm-hmm. So very, very special and with a great character, actually. So Abruzzo is very famous for very big productor, very big producer, so also the cooperative, but also other very big producer that do more than millions the bottle. And Montepulciano also, I saw in United States a lot of low price Montepulciano that are bottled outside our region. Consider that 80% of the DOC Montepulciano d'Abruzzo is bottled outside the region, actually. So it's not so easy to let the people understand there are very high-quality Montepulciano.
That's true. I was surprised. We went to what I consider to be a very good quality wine store, and Stefano showed me multiple Montepulciano. Said, see, this one's bottled in Verona, and this one's bottled in Piedmont. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I was amazed by that fact.
Yeah. But it's growing a very high-quality group of producers mm-hmm. in Abruzzo. So you can find it, I think, also in the United States, a lot of them.
I know a little bit of this story, and you touched on it before, but you grew up in Bologna, loved wine, even at 18, took the Italian sommelier exam, which from what I understand is very challenging exam. And you met your beautiful wife from Loretto Aprentino, but immediately the thought wasn't to move to...
No. Actually, in the first years, we get married in 2005 in Loretto Aprentino, and my wife never took to me to the vineyard, actually. We went to the vineyard 2 years later, and as I told you, it was an incredible heart attack for me because... I saw the vines, and it's a special place. It's a special place for me, actually. And for 2 years, actually, I started to work only during the weekend because I had another job, actually, very different. And for a couple of years, I worked the vines just during the weekend. It was like I don't know, I had to get away. It was my getaway mm-hmm. from the town, actually. And in 2009, I found for a chance, it was not programmed. I found a very old winery on the underground of the main house of the farm, actually. And I after that I knew that the family produced wine since 1785 until 1955. So for 54 years the winery slept, and in 2009 we started to restore, just restoring the concrete tanks and restoring the wall, actually, that are wall on in stone. And then we started the year after to buy two big barrels, and we started to an experiment, and we are still continuing experiment every year, actually. And When I found the winery, I told to my wife that it was it was mandatory to us to do something. Actually, it was because we could not have been doing nothing in that place, because the vines are incredible, and the winery is known to be artisan wine. So it was a forced way to do that, actually. And working the vines, we started in 2008 actually with a revolution in the vine. We quit to any fertilization in 2008. We quit any treatment with the penetrating products. So it was a revolution.
Just to clarify for everyone, the family had made and maybe bottled their own wine until the 1950s, but had maintained the vines and sold them off to the co-op.
Yes, the co-op or to other producer, actually. Mm-hmm. And the important thing that, you know, in Italy now you can find vines also in the highways. So people planted vines everywhere. But it's important to study the history of the vineyards to understand where are the correct, the best place to plant. It was surprising to me to find documents that attested that the vines are at the Fermos since 9th century. So it's more than 1,000 years that vines are cultivated in that area of Loreto Portino. So it is so important. It was a challenge to me in 2009-10 when for the first time my friend Francesco Valentini came to the vines and he told me, remember, Stefano, that the best vines in LA are the Fermos one. So it was a great challenge to me because I had to do good stuff, actually.
Wow. I want to, we're going to have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to hear more about those early years, and especially your friendship with Valentini.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Dave Arnold from Cooking Issues, and I'm here to talk to you about the Museum of Food and Drink, which is finally getting a brick-and-mortar space right here in Brooklyn, New York. So the Museum of Food and Drink is opening the MOFAD Lab, our first laboratory and gallery space, where we will be putting on an exhibition called Making It or Faking It, the history of the flavor industry. And it tackles a very important topic, which is how the food system got to be the way it is now as a result of the intervention of the flavor industry, how that happened. Get your tickets at tickets.mofad.org to come see the first exhibit ever of the Museum of Food and Drink at the MOFAD Lab, brought to you by Infinity on 62 Bayard Street.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Culture City, a for-purpose organization that provides a place of acceptance and support for all autism families. This is Culture City's founder, Julian Maha.
Culture City was really born out of necessity. You know, it was born when my, currently six-year-old boy was diagnosed with autism. His name is Abram and he's nonverbal. And even though my wife and I were both physicians at the time, it was really hard for us to find any resources at that point to help him. All the other organizations out there that we know of, they do phenomenal work, but their main focus is basically finding a cure for autism. Our main focus is basically trying to prepare the community to accept not only children with autism, but their families as well. You know, in addition to that, we also want to provide help to these families in the here and now. You know, so tangible things like, you know, iPads for nonverbal kids, you know, financial scholarships, therapy scholarships, you know, art camps, and also some lecture series that can teach parents about, you know, dietary issues, you know, how to financially plan and things like that.
For more information, visit culturecity.org.
All right, and we are back in the Drink. I'm here with Stefano Papetti Cerroni of De Fermo. And just a reminder, if you guys are around 5 to 8 o'clock tonight, you can stop by Anfora, and we will be doing a producer night with Stefano. Just come by, have a glass of wine, and hang out with us. As I said before, Stefano's wines are very brand new to New York, and only new to Italy as well. Only 5 years or so they've been making wine. So if you taste them now, this will be like seeing, you know, Bob Dylan at Cafe Wa in the West Village, you know, seeing the band before they got big. I anticipate really great things.
Thank you, Joe.
I wanted to talk to you before we left for the break. You, You were talking a little bit about a local producer, Francesco Valentini, who I think makes some of Italy's most distinctive and extraordinary wines. And his rosé, the Cerasuolo, is a wine that I can never fully wrap my head around. It just is one of the most intriguing, certainly delicious, but extraordinary wines. And early on, when you started working down there, you started up somewhat of a friendship.
Yeah, actually, I knew Francesco after my starting of working in the vine. And Francesco is one of the example of perfect correspondence between the vine, the wines, and the producer. Actually, he is a person that continued to do a lot of research on himself, on his vines, and on the wines. Actually, he's very serious and deep. You know that his father was the most famous vigneron in Italy, yeah. Eduardo. But the son that started at 18 to doing wine is not less deep than the father, actually. And when we started, with the prologue that is Montepulciano. After that, Francesco told me, you are in LA, you have to do a serious Cerasuolo. That you know that is the rosé wine done by Montepulciano grape. So he suggested me more or less how to do that. So in a very artisan way, actually choosing big barrels. And nobody, we are three in the whole region to do Cerasuolo in big barrels, fermenting in big barrels, obviously without add anything to the fermentation.
Wait, who's the other one? You, Valentini.
And a little producer that is named Giuliano Pettinella. And he produces just 2,000 bottles of Cerasuolo. And I think that is the best Cerasuolo you can find actually in Abruzzo. 2,000 bottles, but it's fantastic. Tauma is the name of the wine, but it's impossible to have it abroad because just 2,000 bottles goes away very fastly, actually. And it's fantastic. And Cerasuolo is my favorite wine, actually, because it's the traditional wine, everyday wine of the of the farmers, actually. And it's the gastronomic wine, I think, because you can have it with more or less everything on the table if you play with temperatures. You can have it with also with pizzas and pastas. It's perfect matching with tomatoes, actually. And we believe in growing up with the consideration of Cerasuolo that have been so under considered by the people, because the big producer do it with Sagnier procedure. So they do the last important wine of the wineries in Abruzzo is the rosé, while if you do seriously, is the most difficult to us to have it, because the fermentation are more difficult to respect the Montepulciano and also the whites. So for us is our perfect boy in the winery, actually.
Yeah, I'm with you. I absolutely love Cerasuolo. Another Cerasuolo that you can't find here in the States is the Emidio Pepe Cerasuolo.
Oh yeah, I think that all the Abruzzo's producer should do a monument to Emidio Pepe and his family, because they promoted and they took to United States all over the world the high quality wines from Abruzzo, promoting with great sacrifice of travels and so I think that Pepe's family should have a monument done by the vigneron of Abruzzo, actually.
I would certainly support that. I am a fan, and we have come to know each other really at the recommendation of the Pepe family.
Exactly.
When I was looking to do my to work on Anona, the project, they said you must meet Stefano, and I think the first time we met, actually I got lost in Loreto Aprentino and was concerned maybe Stefano was like, I don't want to work with this
it's
guy.
It's not so easy to get lost in Loreto Aprentino, but you did it.
I've managed to do it somehow. But yes, thank you to the Pepe family. Amazing.
Yeah.
Tell them next time to bring the charisuolo to New York.
Because there's no charisuolo here.
There's no charisuolo
here. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, what a pity.
He thinks Emilio believes that the charisuolo is not as great as his other wines and thinks that America should only have the best wines.
Wow.
But I disagree. I love
it. I disagree too, actually.
I
love it. Great.
So one of the things that I admire so much about the way that you guys work in the vineyards and also in the winery is that you work in the most natural way possible. And I think the wines are so expressive because of that. Is that something that you'd always envisioned, like from the moment you're like, we're going to work, I love this vineyard and I'm also going to work in the most natural way? Or because it's more work by hand, it's more challenging.
Yeah. But it's a nice, I think that is a natural consequence to producing natural wines if you work the vines in the way we work, actually. If you do seriously biodynamic or organic agriculture in the vineyard, I think that is an assumption, is a natural consequence to have wines done without interferences between the terroir and the bottle, actually. The goal of natural producer is to do wines without interferences. Mm-hmm. So I cannot guarantee that each vintage should be the maximum. I don't know, but we have to respect the vintages. So that, for example, in 2013 we had problems, so we will have 50% of Prologo respected 2012 because we decided to produce less. And for a moment we thought that 2030 will never become Prologo, but something else. And we gave time to the wine in the winery, actually. But as I told, it's a natural consequence. So also this year, that after 6 years, we had for the first time some little problem in fermentation. I mean, Montepulciano went so high temperature because we do not control the temperature. So the fermentation seems to be stopped for a week. And my wife can witness that I didn't sleep for a week, actually, because it was terrifying to me, because I was thinking to lose the whole production of Montepulciano 2015. That is great. After a week, and this is the beauty things producing wine, is the fermentation process that is, I think that is not, you cannot explain at 100%. Also, the major scientists or enologists or winemakers cannot explain exactly what happens at 100% in fermentation. So that this year, after a week of sleeping, the wines awaken. And now finished the fermentation the day before I came to New York. So it was a great
relief for you before you got on the flight.
Yeah, but it's suffering, but it's the beauty things of
in terms of the
wine.
Temperature increasing in the barrel, how long does that last? And is there an arc and it comes back down?
Yeah.
How does that happen? Is it slow at first and then it peaks very high and then comes down?
So it's beautiful because you cannot say every year what is going to happen. So during the last year, the temperature went up very slowly, had some peak, and then went down. This year, in a couple of days, it started at 18, more or less 18 Celsius, and it went to 37. I mean, that is the maximum. After that, the yeast is starting to suffer a lot. But in a couple of days, it was so fast. But it depends on the day of the harvest, probably, because we did the harvest after 2 days of very hot. It was very hot days, and probably we should have waited a couple of days more to do the harvest of Montepulciano. But you know, it's a lesson. Every year we learn something.
Yes.
We learn something. Oh, even Francesco Valentini, that has a lot of vintages, every year he learns something. Because if you work naturally, you cannot manage the thing. But you learn learn something and it helps you.
Right. You can only manage physically, not
exactly.
chemically, right?
You
can choose when you're picking or how you're doing it, but you can't add anything to it.
If we need to have low temperature, we open north windows of the winery and we hope that the fresh air of the night get down the temperature, but we have no chance to control neither the temperature, actually.
Now, I know that you're close friends with some other producers who make wine in a similar idea to what you do. Is there a very a big group of Italian producers who have the same idea? Are you have a close group of friends? Do you share a lot of information and ideas?
I mean, when I started, I had some myth of Vignerona. I had some... I was used to read magazine and going to fairs and wineries. And when I started to producing wine, one of the most beautiful things I had was the meeting with this kind of people. A beautiful woman like Elena Pantaleone or Elisabetta Foradori that... they accepted me immediately, and they share their think about producing wine. So I learned by them talking, and after a few years, they still continue to share with me and ask the weird thing that someone asked me how to do some stuff in the winery, actually. That is sounds so strange to me because I am the kid of the group, actually. But it's growing. I think that the future of the wine is doing like that. I think it's an assumption for everybody that want to start to work seriously in the wine is working in that way, very naturally. In the winery and also in the winery. And in Italy, I think that the market of wine has a great crisis, but it's a crisis of the big producer, the little producer or medium producer that works seriously. They have no problem to sell their wine because their wine, you can recognize it just smelling it and because they have character. So because I think that the goal is to have wine that have a characters are individual and they are genuine, so you can drink a bottle without any problem. Obviously alcohol is a problem, but your body recognizes the good wines, actually. And I know that a lot of friends that start to drink natural wine cannot go back and drink conventional wine, actually, because their body does not accept anymore that wine.
I believe that. I really do. I think that people complain of red wine making them feel better or sulfites or whatever it is, but I think it is really all the other gunk that goes into not naturally made wine that makes you feel bad. And you don't know what that is. It doesn't have to say on the back of the label or anything. But when you have a real wine, a true wine like yours that is made cleanly without any additives, you feel great the day after. And you feel great the night of. And I think your wine has a ton of character, or your wines have a ton of character. And I love them. And I'm so happy that you're here.
Thank you, Joe. I'm happy too.
Unfortunately, the time just flew away. So to continue the conversation, as I said, come to Anfora tonight. We're going to have a lot of fun, 5 to 8 o'clock. And otherwise, look for De Fermo Wines. They're at tons of great restaurants now. You can find them at Charlie Bird, at Del Posto. And thanks so much to Grand Cru for having the foresight to bring in great producers such as De Fermo. I love the work that you guys are doing. Thanks to all of you guys for listening, and especially big thanks to our producer, Jory Morales, and Jack Inslee, who runs stuff around here with Aaron and Eloisa. Ciao. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Stefano. Ciao, Joe.
In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.